This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Cincinnati has seen a dramatic increase in gun violence this year. Cincinnati Inquirer reporter James Pilcher took an in-depth look at the rise in violence for a series that's available online at cincinnati.com and is going to appear in the Sunday and Monday print editions in the newspaper. He and Ozzie Davis III, head of Ozzie Davis & Associates and executive director of the Avondale Comprehensive Development Corporation, join us for a look at the upsurge in gun violence and possible causes. And Ozzie and James, thank you for being here this afternoon.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you can join our conversation, 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. James, just how bad has the gun violence gotten in Cincinnati?
Year over year through early September, the number of people who've been shot is up 30% as compared to that same period last year. We're looking at 322 through September 2nd. It was 322 total people were shot. And again, that's...
Of those, how many actually died from that?
47.
Okay.
Or 48 actually died. The overall homicide rate is, I think we're standing at about 53 as of, there was one the other day in Mount Washington or yesterday. I think it's 53, 54, somewhere in that range. We're talking specifically about guns, which there's a slight increase here in Cincinnati in terms of homicides, but it's really the shootings that's really got everybody's attention.
And yeah, we're not 30% increase is just, that's incredible.
Absolutely. And we're not the only ones. Milwaukee has seen 100%. They've seen their shooting rates double and their homicide rate is upwards of 70% higher. Louisville is going through a lot of violence right now. Milwaukee, Chicago, obviously, has been in the news a lot. So we're not alone. It's a nationwide trend right now, and there's not a lot of answers. Everybody's kind of shrugging their shoulders. Everybody's saying, well, we're blowing it out of proportion because it has been so calm. It's not as bad as it was, say, 20 years ago, but still perception is reality, and it is much worse than it has been.
Now, you're talking about other cities have experienced something similar this mm-hmm. year. You keep hearing the term Ferguson effect, the so-called Ferguson effect. Is that part of what's going on in Cincinnati?
I can't speak to what's going on in the other cities. But I can say that I did ask that question of several people, including people such as Mr. Davis, as well as the police themselves, the mayor, others. And they all say, no, Cincinnati's a little different. I mean, the city is still reeling. The police force is reeling from the tragic loss of Officer Kim earlier this summer. Obviously, the turmoil around the chief has caused some morale issues. But actually, people say that if anything, the fact that overall, you hold the shootings aside and the gun violence aside, overall crime rates have stayed almost the same year over year.
Yeah, I thought they've been declining in some cases.
Crime has declined. Some property crime has declined. They say that that's a sign that maybe the police are still being professional here, still willing to engage. I think from what I'm hearing from the guys on the street, they're being whipsawed a little bit. You got one chief telling you one thing, the city council wants you to do another thing, and there's not a cohesive strategy.
So, Ozzie, you don't think the Ferguson effect is coming into play here, do you?
Well, I'm not certain I even know what the Ferguson effect is.
Yeah.
But I will say that...
The idea that the police are reluctant to enforce things as vigorously as they have in the past because of what happened in Ferguson. Is that right, James?
Yeah. It's just basically, hey, we're going to take a hands-off approach because if we do anything wrong, it's going to make the national news and we're going to have riots on our hands.
Well, so, I knew the concept. But having just spoken with Iris Rowley, who just got back from Ferguson last week, I'm not certain that's really happening.
Yeah.
Not in Ferguson, and definitely not happening here. And we've got the advantage of having already gone through the collaborative agreement, the 2001 uprisings, and the decade of negotiations between the community and the police department. So I think we would be able to see a slowdown effect pretty dramatically. And I don't think...
It'd be evident if that were happening?
Yeah, I mean, the number of calls, the number of incident reports have not dropped.
And I'm not hearing any of that in the community as far as the Cincinnati Police Department. The Cincinnati Police Department is definitely trying to do their job, but this gun epidemic, and I've been pushing the health institutions in the area. And thanks to Interact for Health, we are, and the health department, we are getting into gun violence as a public health epidemic. And I don't think we're paying enough attention to the real causes of gun violence. And I was just talking to a kid on my way down here. He's 17. He's not in school. All right, so when are you going to go to school? Well, I got to get a car. You got to get a car before you go to school? No, you got to go to school. He's got two jobs, but he's just working to continue to be poor. And if he's 24 with no high school degree, with the two jobs, he's a good kid.
But it sounds like his priorities are backwards.
They're very skewed, and he's working to be in a position that it's not going to benefit him.
And that was one of the findings. I won't say findings because these are all kind of intertwined factors that I described, is the fact that the people who are doing the shooting are increasingly younger. The people who are getting shot are increasingly younger. The number of juveniles caught with a gun is more than doubled over the last 5 years. If you look at it last year versus 2010, it's more than doubled, and we're on pace to exceed that this year. So, you know, for some reason, the younger kids are more willing to, he talked about the access to guns, but they're also more willing to get guns. And they're willing to just, what would have been a street, you know, a brawl, a fist fight, is turned into gunfights.
Ozzy, why do you think that is? What's driving these younger people? And when we talk about younger, how young are we talking here, James?
13, 14.
13, 14. Ozzy, what's pushing this?
Well, I think some of it is the impact of crack cocaine in the early 80s. And I think we're just now really seeing how ravishing it is for communities, particularly those communities most impacted by the crack epidemic of the 80s. And now young teenagers don't quite have the same type of fears. When I was 14, seeing a gun was scary. Now, shooting a gun is, if you haven't shot a gun by 14, you're kind of like a nerd. Like, having a gun, that's a regularity. And I know in James's column, he talked about how there are community guns. That's a regularity. We search bushes and hiding places.
So behind air conditioners and heaters.
That's a term that the community gun. Explain that, Ozzy. Exactly is that? Is that the same as a stash gun?
The same as a stash gun. Okay. It'd be a gun anybody could use, wipe it off.
The people in the neighborhood know where this is at? And
some of us.
Okay.
And I mean, some of the places you could figure out, like if there are a bunch of guys hanging and there's a air conditioner out of an apartment building, that'd be a good place to stash a gun. So we would go and search those places. And I mean, the police are all on top of things of that nature. But the ability for teenagers to think in that path is frightening.
Are the kids more thin-skinned than they used to do? Because James brought up an interesting point that they're more apt to pull a trigger nowadays than they are maybe to just punch somebody for an insult or walk away from a situation.
I don't know if it's thin-skinned. I just think, I mean, there was always going to be some sort of street yard violence. I just think that the tools are different. And like I said, instead of throwing a punch, they pull a trigger. That's some of it. You know, I don't want to say it's all that, because some of the other things that I heard were, and Ozzy can speak to this, the drug trade has changed dramatically and how the drug trade is carried out in the city. It used to be you fought for your turf, you fought for that street corner. Nobody could get you off that street corner to sell your drugs. Well, you don't have to have a street corner anymore, because you just text everybody, say, hey, here's where I'm going to be, I'll sell you the drugs. So what I've heard now because of that is that the supply of these drugs, crack, heroin, cocaine, has become a little tight, has become, you know, short into the city. So the street-level dealers are fighting over who gets to have access to that supply. That's one aspect. And then there was another street organizer who told me the street corner concept still exists, it's just it moves around. So if there's a hot street corner that you know you can do well on, they will fight over that. It's not like that's theirs forever. They'll move around, but there will be fights over those geographic locations as well. So, you know, that's definitely contributing to it. Different factions, and Mr. Davis and I talked about this extensively, as well as like Avondale is a crossroads. There's a lot of people related to other people. So, and I talked to other people in Avondale, said the same thing. They said, we got people coming in here trying to sell drugs. They don't even live here. They come in, sell the drugs, they leave. So, you know, it creates this community versus the outsiders, and that even raises the tension even more.
Well, you add the police into that. You add the police into that battle of known hot street corners, and it causes turmoil in the drug community. Because if I know and you know and the police know that this corner is a particular drug corner, well, that's going to be a challenge for everybody. So now you're trying to find places where there may not be knowledge, and you take residents in neighborhoods like Avondale. They don't like that stuff on their street. So when it starts to happen, and at our last community council meeting Tuesday, there was a lot of conversation about drugs being dealt on streets, and the residents are very irate about drive-by drug deals happening on their streets, and the police are paying particular attention to that.
And we're seeing it spread out into other communities. For example, just last night, a man was shot and killed in what looks to be a possible drug deal gone bad, or retribution killing in Mount Washington, which up until this point has not had a shooting at all this year. So it's spreading out into some of the more, what everybody would say, affluent areas. So that's certainly a concern as well. Another factor that I talked about was when we talked about the thin-skinned and the things escalating quickly. Well, that turns into, you shot my brother, I'm going to go get your guy.
So revenge is
the revenge is spiraling out of control.
Seeing a lot of that, Uzi.
Oh, absolutely.
And then on top of that, there is a sense of I can get away with it because nobody's going to rat on me. Everybody's so scared to be a witness, to testify, to say, yeah, that guy killed it, or that guy shot that guy, that it just makes it even harder for the authorities to pull these guys in, and they're walking around with no fear of getting caught.
513-419-7100 to join us in our conversation. And let's talk with Charles in Blue Ash. Hi, Charles.
Hi. You've been actually talking about the questions I had. Kudos, Ozzy. You know, I think you're one of the big leaders in this effort.
Thanks, Charlie.
The issue we're dealing with in the community, I'm glad you brought up the fact it's in other areas. Fort Mount Washington, too, has been doing some complaints. They haven't reached any of the violence stages yet that I can determine. But I'm concerned about what we used to call the old I-75 factor, which is the drug trade that goes back up and down in the communities, and the fact that maybe this is the current other issues that I've been dealing with here that may be benefiting some of these outside elements is maybe upsetting the whole relationship between police and the community. And the other thing I was concerned about in terms of the concerns of I would say basically the African-American community about the collaborative agreement, and that maybe that it's time for the political leadership to actually say they support it and not just leave it on the burden or the shoulders of just either the past or the current police chief.
Well, I can address the 75 factor, and I actually live in Northern Kentucky, and I'm sure Mark has done shows and shows and shows, and we've written stories and stories and stories about the heroin problem. I mean, there's a Kroger right off 75 that everybody knows where you can go get heroin, right there in Northern Kentucky. So, yeah, I mean, I would completely agree that 75 being the route from Florida all the way up to Detroit creates this, and we're a major stop along that drug route. And that does create some outside influences when you look at the drug stuff. As for the collaborative and the interaction between the community and the police, all I know is that the police are at least publicly scratching their heads because they feel like they're trying. They're really scratching their heads. With lead quote in my stories from the mayor saying they don't know. I mean, they just don't have a single thing they can push a button on and say, yeah. This is causing this violence.
So no specifics, but they have a lot of different factors, as we've been talking about. Is the younger offenders, drugs, the easy availability of guns, all those things.
And this is one thing, and I'd like to hear Ozzy speak on this. Is, you know, I talked to him, I talked to other people on the street. They're saying they can get a Glock for $90 to $100 and whatever. And our first thought was, oh, there must be just this flood of guns. Maybe they're coming from the gangs. Maybe they're coming from whatever.
How available are they?
Well, they're incredibly available. But the police say there are no more guns on the street than there ever have been.
So they're saying the supply is not any larger than it's been in the past?
And that's where the disconnect is. I don't know. And I'd love to get Mr. Davis to talk about it. When I told him about the $90 thing, they said, well, we do undercover buys. The same gun costs us $200. And I'm like, okay, there's some kind of disconnect here when it comes to the guns. So, you know, I'd like to get his take on it. The ATF even says, hey, you know, we're taking more guns off the street, but that's because we're trying harder. It's not that there's more out there.
That's hard. It's just really hard to swallow. From our perspective, it seems like there are more guns. And there seems like there's less of a challenge to more guns. And there's definitely a fear, particularly among legislators, to challenge anything having to do with the right to bear arms. I've got a good friend who's a big-time judge, won't call his name. But he's not willing or interested to challenge, you know, the Second Amendment.
But, you know, there's a difference. We're talking about illegal guns versus legal gun ownership, Ozzy. And you know, I can't imagine why anybody wouldn't want to tackle the problem of illicit guns and too many guns flowing through a community.
Well, I think that's the, you know, advantage of the gun lobby. And it doesn't get separated for those of us in the community that are having to deal with the problems of guns. Yes, I believe in the right to bear arms, but when the right to have an arm has gone so bad in so many places, they're not just legal guns. There are illegal guns and legal guns that are causing problems. Because if you have a legal gun and I steal it, well, your legal gun can kill somebody.
And over the last 2 years, it's at least the Cincinnati Police Department has increased the number of guns they've taken off the street by 20-25%, which we show in our graphics in our story. But again, you know, talk to the captain in charge of that, and it's because they've doubled the number of officers they have attached to the ATF task force here, the federal task force. So they're making a concerted effort, but they're going after big guys. They're going after the guys that are carrying, you know, 40, 50 guns in their trunk. They're selling them out of their trunk. It's really hard to get down at that street level where a gun goes from one guy to another guy to another guy within a span of 3 weeks. You know, and I talked to a couple defense attorneys about this, and they say, oh, these guys pass guns around. They'll just, here's $50, I need your gun. So, I mean, how do you get down to that level and police that? That's the challenge.
Ozzy brought something else up interesting too, the idea that even legal guns can be stolen.
Absolutely.
And turned into illegal purposes.
Most of them are.
Did you look at this?
Well, it's hard to track individual guns. There's legislation that prohibits me from tracking the path of an individual gun from its owner to its to the time it's commissioned in a crime. However, most of the guns that were used or have been seized were last known to be owned legally at least 3 years ago. So there is quite a bit of time between the time it's bought legally and the time it makes it to its illegal part in the street. So that there's not a lot of somebody's going in to buy a gun for somebody else who might use it in a crime. There's not a ton of that going on. So somebody might go to a gun show, say, and buy a gun and then give it to somebody, kind of like somebody would buy somebody's liquor for an underage person, right? There's not a lot of that going on. Straw man purchases is what they call them, according to the statistics. But there is still this, again, flow, if you will. If you have a gun, you might have a different gun in a month. It just goes like that. And Mr. Davis can probably attest to that. It's not like you buy a gun for life in this kind of scenario.
Oh, definitely. I mean, most in that community, in the illegal community, don't want a gun.
Right.
They don't want a gun that it's attached to them. So
it's a fungible. It's a commodity. You use it, you throw it away, you get another one later. When you need it, you get one, and then you throw it away. I mean, that's how it works. And they're so easily accessible that's how it rolls through. And I did want to talk about, and Mr. Davis has had some thoughts on this too. I did want to talk about one of the other potential factors is that we did have such a long period of calm. We did have relatively low crime rates, shooting violence rates. And all of a sudden, the programs that had been funded fairly well after 07, after 01, when we had other surges, when we had the unrest in 01, and even the collaborative agreement had put some money into this, they kind of scaled back. you know, CERV, which has been in the news a lot lately, community policing centers. Mr. Davis mentioned Operation Ceasefire.
We've done our job. We're not
they're defunded. They're pulled back. All of a sudden, now we need them. They're not there. And I know he had some thoughts about that, but that's certainly something I heard. And now all of a sudden, they're trying to push money into it, and it's not too little too late, but it's going to take a while for it to have an impact.
Yeah, particularly the two programs that James and I talked about were Out of the Crossfire and Ceasefire. And it's almost like you're being penalized for having some success. And you even see it in the collaborative agreement with the Citizens Complaint Authority. So there are less complaints now. Well, there are less complaints now because there were more complaints then, but we need to keep the same amount of staff, same amount of investigators, mm-hmm. same amount of opportunity so that you don't have this up and down.
Well, CERV, for example, at one point had 14 street workers. They're down to 7 now, and that has to cover the whole city.
So their staff's cut in half.
Exactly. So, and then you have this uprising, like the surge in violence. I mean, Avondale, as of early September, had 42 people got shot in Avondale this year. 42. That's like 8% of the whole city. And so, yeah, and I know we have to compare it on a per capita basis and all of those things. But still, I mean, so you focus all your people there, and then all of a sudden you have an outbreak in West End. What do? You don't have enough people to go around.
And that's one of the major problems when we're addressing this crime problem. We're asking for you to target Avondale, target District 4, and it's not fair to Westwood. It's not fair to Price Hill. What do you do and how do you do it? Because the resources are thin, and if you spend your time in Price Hill and Avondale, then it's going to crop up in Winton Terrace or in Evanston. So it's very difficult, and I've actually had a conversation with the chief about deployment because I don't quite understand deployment. Police deployment is a science for police officers. I guess I need to go to police school to understand deployment. But I've got some sympathy or at least some empathy around the difficulty for police officers or command staff to determine where do you send police officers and when.
So, James, did you draw any conclusions from this as to, you know, whether you think the city is going to take additional steps?
Well, it is in conclusions. CERV is going to get another look, especially with the new interim chief's committing that he believes in it. They need to be looking at different kinds of potential and current criminals, because I heard story after story, they'd pull somebody in to talk to them as part of the program, and they've already left the life of crime. So they need to look at younger people, and that's been stated. The city council has allocated another $125,000-$150,000 to what's called CPOP, which is the community policing centers, and they're going to do back into that. And I know Interim Chief Isaac is going to try to really reinvigorate the whole community policing program. One of the statistics my colleague Sherry Coolidge wrote about was that when he was captain of District 4, they didn't have any homicides. And they didn't have any homicides at all.
2012.
And that's because he went to the kids' grandmothers and said, hey, keep your kid under control or, you know, work with them. He would work with the family. So I don't know if that can be spread over the whole city, but I know that's what he's going to try and pull upon. I know is I spent a whole evening in the house of somebody who was walking to get a pack of cigarettes, and his mom depended on him for her income. And he stopped to go to the bathroom, mm-hmm. and the next thing you know, the bullet comes through the wall of the bathroom, and he's dead. And that's the conclusion I draw from this, yeah. is that
he was an innocent bystander.
He was an innocent bystander. We had two little girls shot like a mile away from each other in Avondale. That's the conclusion I draw away from this, is that people are getting shot for no reason. And, you know, what do we do about it?
Well, Ozzy and James, thank you for joining me this afternoon.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Ozzy Davis III, head of Ozzy Davis & Associates and executive director of the Avondale Comprehensive Development Corporation, and Cincinnati Inquirer reporter James Pilcher. You can read his series about the surge in gun violence at cincinnati.com. It's also going to appear in the Sunday and Monday print editions of the Cincinnati Inquirer.
Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Today's show was produced by Pete Reitmeier. The technical director was Kevin Merwinski. William White composed the Cincinnati Edition theme music. I'm Mark Haney. Stay tuned for Science Friday, coming up next on 91.7 WVXU. In 2013, more than a million student veterans were using their GI benefits to attend college, and that number is estimated to increase by 20% over the next few years. On the next Cincinnati Edition, we look at veteran students on campus. We also talk with American Radio Works producer Samara Freemark, and in Focus on Technology, the ethical question surrounding driverless car crash algorithms. That's on Cincinnati Edition, Monday afternoon at 1 on 91.7 WVXU.